I'm Ali Luke, which is at Ali Ventures on Twitter, if you want to tweet as we're going through. And Ali at aliventures.com is my email address. I'm going to give you a link at the end of the presentation where you can see all of the slides online. So don't worry about trying to copy down stuff that you see. Like, feel free to just kind of sit back, maybe make some notes, maybe keep in mind a particular project that you're trying to edit at the moment, just as we go through. So I'll give you that link at the end on the last slide. So the four steps that we're going to go through are these. Reading through your whole piece, whether that's a blog post or something like a novel or an ebook, editing the big picture of that piece. So the big picture is things like the structure, whether all your chapters in your ebook are supposed to be there, whether all the paragraphs in your blog post should be there, whether they're in the right order, and so on. And then we get onto step three, which I think is what lots of people think of when they think editing. So that's the details. That's editing for flow and for style, editing for typos and spelling mistakes, because they do happen, and so on. And then finally, step four is using formatting, which I know that sounds like maybe more of a design issue, but I think it's a really significant thing for us to consider as writers, because the way in which you format your writing is going to have an impact on how people read it and how well they learn from it. So why edit at all? I hope you're kind of in this room because you think that editing's important, but I know in the blogging world that it may seem that, you know, content just stays up there for a day or two. Maybe it doesn't seem like it's worth the time to edit. Maybe it's hard enough just to find the time to write. My view is that however good or bad you are at writing, editing will make you better. So, you know, if you're an okay writer, editing your work well will get you to good. And if you're a great writer, then editing your work well will get you to amazing. So there's kind of no excuse for not doing it, you know, depending on how good or bad you might think you are. And these are the reasons why, for me, editing is so significant within the blogging world in particular. So one is just to create a great first impression. If you're working on something like a pillar post, a piece of cornerstone content for your blog, then that really needs to be edited. If you're working on a guest post, you know, if you're submitting something to, say, Copyblogger, you don't want to send it to them kind of half done, you know, full of typos and poorly structured. And if you're doing an ebook, then you want people to buy from you again. You don't want them to buy this one ebook and kind of think, well, okay, you know, maybe it was worth $20, but it just didn't feel quite finished. And then editing is also a great way to engage your readers well. So if something's well structured, it's easy for people to follow it. If it's formatted well, it's easy for them to take in the content. And obviously this is especially significant if you're maybe teaching something. So if you're doing an e-course or an e-book and you're trying to get a message across and get people to follow some steps. And editing also lets you establish a reputation for quality. So even if you see lots of blogs where the posts don't seem very well edited, or if you've bought e-books yourself which don't seem too great, then you're kind of in a really good position within your niche to put forward yourself as somebody who produces high quality work. And that means that it's well written, that it's not riddled with typos, and so on. So I just thought we'd do a quick show of hands of kind of who's working on what. So who here like writes blog posts? Okay, that's good. That's pretty much everyone. Who's doing maybe ebooks? Like a few people on ebooks. Is anyone doing fiction, like short stories or novels? Okay, like one or two on that as well. So this four-step method works for basically anything you write. So whether it's a blog post or an article or an ebook or a free report, or it's something for your newsletter, or it's fiction, then you can follow this process. And obviously, sometimes the four steps will take you like half an hour. Sometimes it's really quick. Sometimes they'll take you a year. It just depends on the size of the thing you've written, but it's the same four steps. And what's really crucial is that you have a complete first draft. So that means that you don't try and start the editing while you're actually writing chapter one. You don't keep going back and changing the introduction. And it means that you don't start editing when you're halfway through. So you don't write half a blog post and then edit it and then write the second half, because this is what we'll come on to in step two, the big picture. It's easy to make kind of mistakes in part one, think you fix stuff and then do part two, and then it doesn't quite flow as a whole. So before you edit, you should really have the first draft finished. Step one, reading. I like this quote. If you reread your work, you can find on rereading a great deal of repetition can be avoided by rereading and editing. I think that's a good one. So this is why reading matters, because often you think you know what you wrote, and maybe you're working on, say, an ebook or even a novel, and you've been doing it for a year or 2 years, and actually you've completely forgotten what was in chapter one or chapter five. And it's very easy to find on the, like a micro level like this, that there's some repetition, but also on a kind of big picture level, that you've repeated perhaps the same thing in chapter two, and then chapter 10 is kind of similar, and then in chapter 15 you had a whole section on that again. So I know this sounds a bit basic, telling you how to read, but it is a really important step before you start editing. So I always recommend reading on paper rather than on your computer screen, or maybe on an e-reader or a tablet if you need to, or as a PDF. And with print-on-demand sites, you can make just literally one copy of your book. So if you want to do that, just so you can read it more like a reader, or just kind of get your head out of the writing phase and into the editing phase, it's really cost-effective. And this is especially important for something that's maybe like an ebook or some launch content or pillar posts, anything that you really need to get right and that needs to make an impact on your reader. So that's step one. Step two, the big picture. I leave out the parts that people skip, Elmore Leonard. And your manuscript is both good and original, but the part that is good is not original, and the part that is original is not good. So these are things that you're looking out for in the big picture. Which parts are just redundant? Which parts aren't so good or aren't so original? And obviously, you know, not everything you write is going to be completely brand new, but you can always give a new angle on an old topic, however well-trodden your content is. So why do the big picture? Because often when people think about editing, they want to jump in and start fixing all the typos, which makes sense because it's easy to see a typo and easy to say that's wrong. But the big picture really matters too, because if you start on the big things, if you start on the big things rather than the little things, it's more effective. If you start by fixing typos and then decide that you're going to cut two whole chapters of your ebook, you've just polished those chapters to perfection for absolutely no reason. So you want to get the big problems fixed before you tackle the little ones. And then also structure and content do matter. So the way in which a blog post or an ebook or even a novel is structured will obviously have an effect on how people read. And when you're in the throes of your first draft, when you're kind of excited and inspired and you're composing it, it's easy to maybe go off on a tangent or to get things in a slightly confused order. And this is something that you can fix during the editing, but you do need to be alert for it. This, I think, like I mentioned before, is crucial when you're teaching people something. So if you've got people going through a sort of step-by-step-by-step process, obviously those steps do need to be in the most logical order for them to follow. And you may find that you've missed some information, or you may find that you've started in the wrong place, and all of this is what you fix in step two. So I'm going to look at both blog posts and ebooks, because I think those were the sort of content that most people were thinking of, and they're slightly different in the way that you would edit the big picture. But before I go on to that, something to mention here is that the better you plan, the less editing you'll have to do. So if you've got a really good outline and you've moved things around in your outline, so you've got all your chapters in the right order for your ebook, or you've outlined your blog post and you've got all of the paragraphs written down in bullet point form or something, then you're going to have much less to do when you edit, because you won't need to take out redundant content that you could have sorted out at the composing stage. So blog posts. One of the things that you should obviously check for is whether you've kind of got all the critical pieces of a blog post. So that's an introduction, a main body, and a conclusion. And this is nothing new. Aristotle said that fiction should have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So this is not like rocket science. This is just everything you write. It has an introduction, a beginning, it has a main body, a middle, and a conclusion, an end. And if you're missing any of those pieces, you know, obviously you'd probably notice if you're missing the main body, because your post would be really, really short. But if you're missing, say, the introduction, or if the introduction isn't working, or if you're missing the conclusion, which is really common on blog posts and in ebooks, then your reader is going to struggle to kind of take in that post as a whole. So your introduction, needs to do the job of hooking the reader and drawing them in. And the problem that I usually see with introductions when I'm coaching people on blogging is that they tend to go on for too long. So they maybe introduce the post by talking about the backstory to the post, you know, what inspired them, why they're writing this post, why they're telling this particular story. And actually, the reader just wants you to get to the main point. So the introduction might just be a paragraph or two, but it needs to do the job of setting up the post, hooking the reader, engaging their attention and moving them into the main body. And then the conclusion at the end of the post. Like I said, this is something that people quite often miss off. And I know it's hard when you're writing to get all of these pieces in place, which is why sometimes you might find that it's easier to do your introduction when you've written the post, or it's easier to do your conclusion while you're editing. The conclusion ideally kind of sums up your post. You know, it maybe gives people a next step. It gives them a kind of resolution. It gives them an ending note. And your conclusion, most critically, is where your call to action goes. And I'll come on to that in a moment. So once you know that you've got the three really big pieces, the big building blocks of your post, then it's about getting the right paragraphs in the right order. So the right paragraphs are the ones that all relate to your topic. You haven't gone off on some massive tangent. You haven't missed out some really critical piece. And the right order is about structuring them in a logical way. So three good words to think here are: what can you add, what can you cut, and what can you move, and whether there's anything that you need to change. You're also going to need one key point in your blog post. And sometimes I find that when I write a post, I've got lots to say, and it might actually end up that I've kind of got two key points. And that's great, because then I've got a sort of two-for-one deal on my post. I can split that one post and have two pieces of great content for the price of one. And obviously, then it's just a case of making sure, do they both have an introduction, and do they both have a conclusion? So if your post doesn't seem to have one key point, then that's definitely something to address when you edit it. And then your call to action. And, you know, unless you're just in blogging because you want to write and you want to express yourself, which is great, then you want your readers to do something. Now, it might be that you're blogging to build a readership, in which case your call to action could be share this post on Twitter, email it to a friend. It could be that you just want to, say, build up the comments on your blog, so you want more feedback. So then your call to action could be leave a comment, tell me what you thought of this post, tell me your ideas, or tell me which of the ideas in the post resonated with you. Or your call to action could be something like, buy my ebook, buy my book, I offer these services. If you don't have a call to action, people will decide for themselves what to do next, and that might well be to leave your blog. So give them some direction. Even if all you do is point them to a related post, that's better than just ending your post and giving them nothing to do. And calls to action are one of the things that I see being missed off the most, and that's such a shame, because they're really the kind of critical place where the post pays off for you. So ebooks then, and similar concerns to blog posts, but obviously on a bigger scale. So with an ebook, instead of looking at paragraphs, you need to ask yourself whether you have the right order of sections or of chapters. And that might mean looking at your table of contents and making some changes. It might mean that you write out your sections and chapters onto index cards and you physically shuffle them around so that you can see, is there a better way to organize this material? And you're always aiming to give the reader the best possible experience. So obviously when you wrote it, you maybe wrote it in the order that seemed logical to you, or you wrote it in the order which you kind of felt inspired. And maybe some ideas came up as you were writing and you kind of threw them in there. When you edit, it's a chance to shape all that and to make it into the ebook that perhaps you kind of intended to write, but it just didn't come out perfect the first time. And then you're also looking for anything that's missing, or anything that's superfluous, or anything that's repetitive. So this is the add, cut, move stuff again. What can you take out? What can you add in? And what's kind of just in the wrong order or needs to be taken out because it says the same thing or needs to be merged with another chapter? And all of this obviously takes a bit more time with an ebook than a blog post. So you do want to allow sufficient time for the editing and really build that into your launch plan. And then again, you've got the introduction to your ebook as well as the conclusion at the end, bookending the material. So with introductions, you might be tempted to tell the reader who you are, why you're qualified to write the ebook, why they should read, and so on. But that's probably not the best material to put up front in your introduction. You want to be useful and you want to be engaging. You want to get them right into the material of your ebook, and probably at that stage, they're not interested in reading 5 pages of your personal story. So keep that out of the introduction. Make the introduction short and relevant to them and keep the focus on what they will learn and how they will benefit. The conclusion is where you sum up and you maybe give them some next steps. So this could be as simple as giving them a checklist of stuff that they've learned while reading your ebook. That's a great way to kind of end on a positive note because you remind them of all the good content that you've given them. So you might tell them, you know, here's the checklist of what we've covered in each chapter so they can just go through that. You might suggest that, hey, if you enjoyed this $7 ebook, I have a $49 e-course. And so it's the start of your sales funnel. And you're doing that towards the end of your book. And this can kind of come merge into an about the author section. So about the author is where you put all of that stuff that you might have been tempted to throw into your introduction. So about the author covers things like who you are, why you wrote the book maybe, how they can find you online, how they can engage with you, how they can hire you, or how they can buy your other products. And all of that can go in at the end of your ebook once you've already delivered them some really good content. So step three, the details. There are two things wrong with almost all legal writing. One is its style, the other is its content. And I believe more in the scissors than I do in the pencil. So that's about cutting, and cutting stuff is kind of a real theme of editing. So we're going to take a bit of time on this step because this is what a lot of us kind of think of when we think editing, and it is a critical step and one that you need to get right because the details matter. And even if you've got the big picture right, even if you've got all the right content in the right order and you're delivering a great message to your reader, if it's full of typos or if the sentences are awkward and don't flow, then people are going to feel disappointed. And if it's a blog post, they might just stop reading. If it's an ebook, they might ask for a refund. So the details really do matter. And obviously in blogging and in any kind of online publishing, it's easy to fix typos. You know, it's not like you've printed kind of thousands of your blog posts to give out or thousands of copies of your ebook, but it's still a good idea to get it as right as you can at the start before you hit publish. So this is what's sometimes called line editing or close editing, because you're going through your work line by line. So with the big picture, you're looking at your work with a kind of holistic view or with a sort of zoomed out, you know, 50,000 feet perspective. You're looking at the whole and you're not worrying too much about the details line by line. But when you get onto the line editing, you really need to zoom in and take a close look. So the first tip here is to separate the finding and the correcting of mistakes. So what I mean by that is that you might print out your blog post, say, you circle things with a red pen or you use a yellow highlighter or whatever it might be, and you find anything that you want to fix. So that could be a typo or it could be an awkward sentence and so on. And then once you've got all the things found, you go back to the computer screen and you type in those corrections. And the reason for doing it this way is because if you start correcting straight onto the screen, first you'll miss things. It's easy to just let your eyes kind of glaze over and see what you thought you wrote, or you know, you kind of know what you wrote, so you just don't pay attention. It's also really easy to introduce new mistakes. So let's say you edit a sentence, you've decided your blog post is too much kind of me, 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 and you want to make it more you, you, you. So you edit something and you change I to you, but you forget to change a similar word later in that same sentence. Or you edit a singular to a plural, but you forget to change the verb later in the sentence. These are really, really easy mistakes to make when you're line editing. So that's why I always recommend that you find the stuff, you circle anything that needs to change, and then you change it. It also then makes it easy for you to go back at a later point to see what changes you did make. So another tip for line editing, this is similar to step one on reading through your work. use paper or use a PDF or get it into some different format from where you wrote it. So say you wrote your post straight into Microsoft Word, or you wrote it straight into your blogging software or Notepad or whatever you want to use. It's easy then for you to kind of see it as a writer. You just see it as what you've written, and your eyes will just miss mistakes. This happens, you know, to all of us. So if you can get it into a different form, even just change the font can make a big difference. And then that's a way to see your work afresh and to see it on that line by line basis, not just kind of skimming over and getting a view of the whole. Reading out loud, obviously this feels a little bit awkward if you kind of sit there speaking your blog posts to the computer, but it's amazingly effective, because when you read out loud, you notice things like sentences that just are too long or clumsy or awkward because you struggle to say them. You notice things like missing words, which are quite hard to spot when you're reading just with your eyes. And you notice slips of style and tone, things that just don't quite kind of fit there, things that don't seem right. And it will let you see your work in a new way. Something else to do when you're line editing is to try and work in short, focused sessions, because this is a really high energy, intense kind of work. And it's very easy to start getting to the point when, you know, the words are just kind of washing over you and you're beginning to miss things. So try and work in short sessions and try to just do the line editing. So if you've also got, you know, email open and Twitter and phones ringing and stuff, your flow of concentration is going to be constantly broken, and you really want to kind of stay in the mood for the piece. So if you can work in short, focused, intense sessions, that's going to make the line editing much more effective. And then, like I said before, it's very easy to reintroduce mistakes when you edit. So you'll fix one thing, but that makes something else kind of go wrong in your sentence. Or you think you've typed in a correction, you've actually added a typo. So when you've separated the finding and correcting of mistakes, you can look back to that bit of paper with all the red squiggles on it, and you can go through line by line and just check everything that you've changed and check that you haven't accidentally introduced some new mistake. And I know this sounds like quite a laborious sort of process with all these different tips, but, you know, it doesn't have to take ages. And you will find that with editing, the more you do it, the easier it becomes, just, you know, like anything. And it does make a difference to the finished piece. So, line editing checklist. These are the things that you're looking out for when you line edit, and I'm going to come on to an exercise in a moment so we can just take a look at some of these in practice. I'll just kind of go through them one by one. Your style and voice matters. So this isn't just kind of looking for things like spelling mistakes and typos. It's making sure that you've said things in the way you want them to be heard. So, you know, with blogging, you're probably adopting quite a conversational style. It's probably not really formal and kind of academic. On the other hand, it may be that you're blogging perhaps for a business or within your own brand, and you don't want it to be too informal. So you're avoiding it being really slangy or, you know, really, really chatty or something. It might be that you want to be serious or that you want to be quite lighthearted. And all of this has an effect on the particular words that you choose. And obviously, when you write, when you do your first draft, you probably just say it the way it comes out naturally. That might be similar to your speaking voice, for instance. Or it might be that you've drafted this thing at several stages. So say it's an ebook. You've maybe written part of it 6 months ago, and then part of it 3 months ago, and then part of it today. And you might find that your voice has actually changed over time. So one of your tasks in editing is to make sure that your style and voice is just consistent throughout the piece. And obviously, there's not one right way to do this. This is completely up to you. The key is that readers don't feel that it's really jarring or inconsistent at any point, and that you have made conscious choices about the words you use, the way you phrase things, and so on. The next thing to look for is whether your sentences are clear. So when we speak, we tend to use quite long run-on sentences, and that's okay because we can use the inflection of our voices and pauses and so on to help people understand what we're saying. If you write in long and complex sentences, the reader only has the words on the page to go on. So it's usually a good idea to maybe split sentences into two, if they're really long and unwieldy, or to rewrite them. If it's a sentence including a list, that's a great opportunity to throw in some bullet points, which is something I'll come onto in the formatting stage. So again, reading out loud really helps with this, just making sure that your sentences flow, that they're as clear as possible. And I don't think it's hard to write a short sentence that's bad, but it's really easy to overload a long sentence. So almost always, if you split a long sentence up, it's going to become clearer and easier to read. And then spelling. is obviously, this is something that kind of we do think of when we think editing. And that means getting all the words right and not just relying on spell checker, because there are some things it won't pick up. So homophones, which are words that sound the same but are spelt differently, your spell checker won't always get those. So if you put right instead of right, or if you have the wrong kind of your or there, and so on, then it's not necessarily going to be something that's kind of flagged up with a little red wiggly squiggle. And then you're looking out for missing words. So it's really easy to accidentally leave out a small word like a or in or the or something like that. Sometimes when you're typing in your first draft, you're kind of enthusiastic, you're really in the flow, and your fingers just miss something. And again, spell checker won't necessarily spot those, so you need to be alert for them as you're reading through. And then obviously typos are just, you know, slips of the finger when you accidentally hit the wrong key. And they happen to all of us, you know, they happen to the best of us, but they are distracting to the reader. And obviously, if there's one typo in your ebook, it's not going to ruin the whole thing. If there's a typo in your blog post, you know, people will cope. But if you consistently have typos and kind of sloppy mistakes, it does give readers an impression that you don't care that much about your content and that you don't care that much about them. And perhaps if your writing itself seems sloppy, they'll worry that your thinking is also sloppy. They'll think that the advice you're giving is not actually so great, even if there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just that those typos or those spelling mistakes are letting you down. And then consistency. Now, this is really an issue not only with if you're just working on your blog yourself, but also if you're working on a blog with multiple writers. So if you've got a blog and there's five of you writing posts, you might want to come up with some kind of style guide, just so that people know how to be consistent. So this is things like capitalization. So let's say with titles of your blog post, you might do title case, where you capitalize all the major words, like I've done with line editing checklist at the top of the slide, or you might choose to just have it with the first word capitalized and the others in just regular case. So if I'd done that, I'd have line editing checklist and just a lowercase e and a lowercase c. And either way is fine. You know, it's not that one's right and one's wrong for titling a blog post, but what I think is wrong is when half your blog posts are done one way and half are done the other way. It just looks kind of messy and inconsistent, especially if you have, say, a list of popular posts or something like that, recent posts in your sidebar. Things like hyphens also come in here. So it might be that you choose to hyphenate certain words or that you don't hyphenate them. So some people hyphenate the word no one and some people have no one as two separate words. You know, and often this is just something for you to decide on, but you do need to be consistent, especially within the one blog post or the one ebook. You know, if you have it like several different ways, it just looks messy. And then punctuation is also an issue here. So if you've got a list of bullet points, say, you want to end each bullet point with a period, or don't end each bullet point with a period, but be consistent within that one list, and ideally be consistent within the whole of your piece. And you know, these seem like really small picky issues, but they are things that give the reader a certain impression of the quality of your content. So I've done a little exercise here, so I hope you can all see it okay on the screen. I'll read it out. This is a piece that I kind of deliberately wrote with a few mistakes or a few awkward things in it. So we're looking for style and voice, we're looking for whether the sentences are clear, we're looking for spelling and typos, and we're looking for consistency. So I'll read it out, and then I'll give you like a minute or two to just think about what you would change in this. Maybe write down, you know, a few notes on what you would change, and then I'll come onto a slide where I'll show you how I would rewrite this, and I'll explain the why of the different changes. So this is the piece. Before you spend months writing an ebook, I think that you should make sure there really is an audience for that ebook. And the very best way to do this, in my opinion, is by surveying one's audience. That's what's written, or what was intended to be written there. So I'll give it like a minute or two and see what you can come up with, and then I'll tell you what I came up with. Okay, hopefully you've had a chance to kind of at least spot a couple of, mistakes or, a few things that you would maybe change if you were editing that. So this is on the one side we've got the example, on the other side my rewrite. So I'll read the rewrite for you. Before you spend months writing an ebook, you should make sure there's an audience for it. The best way to do this is by surveying your readers. So you can just see on the screen, for one thing, it's shorter. I've cut out some words. So like, did anybody find things they were going to cut from there? Yeah, so we've got like a few people, okay, who would have cut things. Another thing is there were a few typos. So did anyone find typos or spelling mistakes? They would have, yeah, okay, definitely people spotted that. So the word audience was spelled incorrectly. It should have been ENCE at the end, and I'd spelled it ANCE. So that's an easy typo or mistake to make, because sometimes you hear it in your head and it sounds one way, but actually that's something that spell checker should flag up for you. So look out for that. Did anybody spot an inconsistency in the way that something was written? Okay, good. What was it? Anybody want to? Ebook, yeah. So ebook. I think up to you whether you want to write ebook as all one word, like ebook with, like we write email, kind of. Like to me, that looks most natural. Or you can write it ebook, E hyphen capital B, ook. And that's fine too. But you need to be consistent within the post. What else? Did anybody spot the missing word? Yeah, the word do was missing. So I had the original had the very best way to this, and it should be the very best way to do this. So that was a hard one to spot because it was kind of on a line break. So sometimes when there's a line break, you kind of read on and you think you've read what was there, but you've actually just missed something in your head. Then the things that I cut out were phrases that just weren't really adding anything. So the original says, before you spend months writing an ebook, I think that you should. And then I rewrote it as, before you spend months writing an ebook, you should. In general, if it's a blog post, people know that it's your opinions. You don't need to say, I think, or I believe, or it is my opinion that. The only cases when you might do that is if you're expressing a difference of opinion with someone, or if there's perhaps particular legal reasons within your niche. So, you're giving, say, financial advice or something, and you really feel the need to kind of say, look, this is just my opinion. But in general, you don't need to tell readers that. They know that the post is your advice coming from your perspective. Then another thing I cut out, did anybody spot that this word was wrong as well? There. Anybody spot that? Yeah, okay, some nods. Yeah, so the word there it's the wrong kind of there. It should be there as in over there, as in rather than there as in belonging to them. So you should make sure there really is an audience. I didn't think it needed underlining that much. I think you should make sure there's an audience is fine. So, sometimes people, your opinion might differ on this. Editing is not just a matter of, like it's right or it's wrong. It's a matter of opinion, of style, of personal preference. So some things you might decide actually you did want it to be more wordy. You did want to say there really is an audience. Again, with the very best way, I just had the best way. I mean, I don't think the word best really needs a qualifier. Like it's either best or it's not. So like I don't think very best makes it more best. So the best way to do this is, and again, in my opinion, you don't need to say that, you don't need to tell people that it's your opinion. The best way to do this is by surveying your readers. You'll notice I changed audience to readers. That's because one of the things I try and avoid in my writing is repeating the same word too many times because it starts to stand out and sound really awkward. So if you might find that this is something to look for when you edit, just look out for maybe you've used the same word 5 times in a paragraph, and actually you just need to vary that word a little bit. And it can be hard to kind of avoid that, but just by rewriting slightly can kind of make a big difference there to the flow. Was there anything else that people spotted that I haven't changed or anything else? Cool. So, but on to step four then, formatting. Everything is designed, few things are designed well. And good design goes to heaven, bad design goes everywhere. And I expect you've seen this. Like, who's ever come across a blog post that just looked so poorly formatted that you just didn't read it? Because I know I have. Yeah, okay. And you don't want people to have that reaction to your content. And formatting is something that, even if, like me, you have kind of zero design ability, you can still do something. So, you don't have to, by any stretch of the imagination, be a design expert. You don't have to be even a technical expert to do formatting. It's just a case of making a few small tweaks to your writing. to get it right. And in some cases, maybe you're writing, say, a guest post or a magazine article, and there will be an editor or a designer who brings in some formatting. But there will still be some considerations like how long your paragraphs are, whether you have bullet points that you will need to attend to. So I'm going to cover some of the easier, quicker things to do first, and then some of the just slightly more involved things that you might want to consider with formatting. So the easy, quick tweaks. I'm going to show you a couple of examples here because I wanted you to sort of visually get a sense of the difference formatting makes. So this is the first example. This is like from one of my blog posts, so I had to take out the formatting to make it look right. So it's not bad, I think, as this. It's got a subheader. This is a post on writing dialogue, so the subhead is Keep Dialogue Tags Simple. And then there's three paragraphs, and they're not ridiculously long paragraphs. You know, I've included some paragraph breaks, so it could be worse. But if you saw that on a blog, it's not the most attractive post in the world. If the whole post was like that and it was just paragraph after paragraph, it's all too easy to click away and find something that's just a bit more engaging as a reader. So I'll show you now the actual post as I published it. Can you see the difference there? So the first one is about half the size. So the second one, I've added so much more white space. It is the same words. It's the same words in both pieces. All I've changed is the way that I've formatted it. So in the second one, you can see right at the top, the subheader is in a heading tag. I think it's a heading 2, or possibly a heading 3 on that page. And so instead of just being a small, bold line of text, it's a bigger line of text that grabs your attention. It says, Keep Dialogue Tags Simple. And as well as this being good for your readers, it's also good for search engines. So if something's in a header tag, Google knows that it's important. So if I was trying to optimize for, say, the phrase dialogue tags, then obviously I'd want to get my subheadings into heading tags so that Google can see that that text is important. But for me as a writer and a blogger, what's more important is that my readers can engage with that post and understand so that the subheaders are clear signposts to them. I've then got a list of bullet points. I've got shorter paragraphs, so I've put in more paragraph breaks. I've got a paragraph in bold. It's a couple of sentences that I really wanted to stand out, and so on. And like these kind of tweaks, they take you sort of 2 minutes to do in WordPress or whatever you're using. They're not hard things to do. They just require a couple of minutes thought about how best can you get this information across to the reader. So here's the things I've done: subheadings, short paragraphs, bullet points, and bold text. And one of the biggest reasons for this is just to increase the white space on the page. When we read online, it's physically harder than reading, say, a book or a magazine. So you want to make it as easy as you can for your readers to just take in that content. And if there's more white space, the page looks more friendly and more attractive. And it's easier for them to keep going. It's easier for them to engage. Next slide. These are more involved tweaks. So just to kind of take a look at what's up on the screen there, and hopefully you can see in the bottom left that I've put a box with a shaded background for the assignment. So these things maybe are not quite so easy to do. Block quotes should be quite straightforward in WordPress. With a block quote, you can hit the little symbol that looks like kind of quotation marks, or you can use block quote in HTML, it's just an HTML tag. And usually, depending on your blog styling, the block quote will be an indented piece of text, maybe in italics or just slightly different formatting. So when you're quoting from someone, it stands out as a quote, so people know it's not you, but it also adds visual interest. That's quite easy to do. Boxes are a little bit harder to add. So in Word, if you're using Word or in your word processing program, you can just add a border around a paragraph and give it a shaded background. That's all you might need to do. And that doesn't take very long. If you're doing it on a blog, you'll need a little bit of CSS code. So either you maybe need to get your designer to help you out there, or it's something you need to do in CSS. It's not amazingly hard. I'm not like the world's most techie person and I can do it. So it's something to look into, especially if you're presenting teaching content. So both these screenshots are from an e-course that I've got. So I really wanted the formatting to not only kind of look good and look engaging, but also to help people learn and to draw them through it. So the assignments are always in a box like this, so that people can always see the assignment. And if they don't have time to kind of read every word of the lesson, their eyes can go straight to the assignment, they can see what they're supposed to do that week. And it just helps it to stand out. With the little graphics or images, that was just to add a bit more white space, add a bit more visual interest, and to help people take in each section as a discrete individual section. So obviously you might want to use an image at the start of your blog post. Like, who puts images at the start of blog posts? Yeah, because that's a really common and great thing to do. But something else you can do, especially if it's a really major piece of content, is to put some images throughout. So it might be that you have one image per point in a list post. It might be that in a how-to post, you have like one image showing how something should look at each step. So say it's a recipe and you give them, you know, a photo of like, hey, this is what the cake mix should look like right now. Or it's a post on how to set up WordPress and you give them a screenshot of, hey, this is what you should be seeing on your screen. You know, this is where you need to type stuff in and so on. And you can use graphics and icons. So if I hadn't used a box for an assignment, if I hadn't felt like comfortable with the CSS code, I would have found a graphic to use. So maybe I'd have used that little green pencil graphic so that every assignment had the same graphic and it just gave a sense of consistency and people knew what to look for. And like, this doesn't need to take long. You know, it's a little bit more involved than just chucking in some bold text. But if you're working on a pillar post or an e-course or an ebook or something that's a really major part of your content strategy, then I think it's worth doing. So, the four steps then. We covered these. We covered reading through your piece. So just getting a sense of your whole piece as a reader would, and reminding yourself of what you wrote, maybe days or weeks or even months before. Editing the big picture. So trying to get the whole structure in place before you obsess over the typos and things, so that if a chapter's going to come out, that it comes out at that point before you polish it. And then editing the details. So getting the spelling mistakes fixed, getting the typos fixed, but also editing for things like style and for voice and for consistency. And then using formatting. So trying to present your words in the best possible way for the reader to actually engage with them. And, you know, some of this might seem a little bit like, well, can't the reader just kind of, you know, if it's great content, surely they'll read it anyway. And maybe they will. You know, if they're committed enough, they will read on through the typos and they will read on through the lack of formatting. But do you really want to take the risk that people are going to have that level of commitment when they're new to your blog or new to your topic, when there's lots and lots of other blogs or ebooks that they could turn to instead in many cases? And then one final slide. This is knowing when to stop. I have been correcting the proofs of my poems. In the morning, after hard work, I took a comma out of one sentence. In the afternoon, I put it back again. I love that quote because I think there comes a stage with editing when you've just kind of edited it to death. And all you're doing is changing commas or, you know, switching sentences around or changing individual words. And it just gets to the point where you have to think, actually, I'm going to let this go. I'm going to hit publish. It might not be 100% perfect, but it's better to have something that's 95% perfect out there for readers than to kind of continue on. So that's where I'll stop. Thank you so much for coming. My website, oh, thank you. My website is aliventures.com, so I blog for writers and bloggers and to some extent for people who are maybe thinking about self-publishing or traditional publishing. And I've put all the slides up at aliventures.com/blogworld-editing. So if you want to go back over the slides or just kind of check something that maybe I went through a bit fast, just feel free to download them and feel free to email me ali@aliventures.com if anything comes up. Yeah, and we've got like sort of 15, 20 minutes for questions if anyone wants to ask anything. If you could step up to the mic, that would be brilliant, just so we record it. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
My blog is a rather historical blog. It's very photo heavy. So how would you suggest the format be changed? There's photos and text. Mm-hmm. And I found myself wanting to put a lot of text to explain the context of these photos. Mm-hmm. So if you're saying that white space is more friendly for a blog reader, and I feel inclined to put as much text to explain these photos as possible, what would you suggest?
Well, I guess I'd say that sometimes a picture says 1,000 words. You've probably heard that one. Obviously, I don't know your blog, so I don't know if the photos need that text, but quite often less is more. So often, you know, like I think I mentioned at least a few times on the editing, sometimes you need to cut stuff out. So it may be that you can get away with just a few sentences. It could be that you do want a lot of text, but you do it with some bullet points or some subheaders. So I would suggest that you try not to let maybe the text overwhelm the images. Like if the images, the photo is the main thing, you don't want the text to kind of completely take away from them. I think all the normal kind of rules of good formatting and editing would still apply, whether you write a little bit or a lot. You know, just break up the paragraphs, maybe try and like put it in some bullet points so that you kind of give, you know, different things about the image. Or maybe with each image you have like three standard subsections, so you maybe explain like, this is where it was taken, this is about the photography itself, this is a bit about the kind of background to the image, this is what it means to me personally, and you always structure it in the same way to give consistency. Does that help?
Yeah, it does.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Much appreciated. You mentioned to write and edit in short blocks, but you didn't put a sort of a time on it. What is a recommended time frame?
I think it depends on you and like your concentration span. I would say most people find that somewhere between 20 minutes and 45 minutes is about as long as they can really focus kind of heavily on something. I mean, I think I would sometimes set a timer myself for, say, 30 minutes. So I tell myself I will write for 30 minutes or I will edit for 30 minutes. And then it helps you stay focused because you think, okay, I can check my emails and I can tweet like once 30 minutes is up. I think maybe experiment a bit because it's very hard to give like a one size fits all answer. I don't want to say to you like, you know, it must always be 30 minutes, but just maybe start with 30 and then try going up or down and see how that plays out.
Hi, Ali.
Hi.
My name is Mark Ensign and I got a question for you. It's a little, it's a hair bit off topic, but I was hoping you can share your process for writing your initial draft. I tend to kind of do a brain dump and then kind of cut and paste and move around, and it sometimes it goes well, sometimes it's torture.
That's tough. I think it helps. You're saying you cut and paste and kind of move things around. It may be that you're trying to sort of edit and draft a little bit at the same time. It helps to separate them. For me, again, working in short sections helps, and having a good plan. Like, obviously, I've been talking about editing, but planning to me is the sort of flip side of editing. The better your plan, the easier the writing and the easier the editing. So maybe if you get like a really good plan and you plan out. So what, I mean, what kind of thing are you thinking of here? Like ebooks, blog posts?
Yeah, mainly ebook, mainly blog posts and shorter ebooks as far as what I'm writing now.
So maybe with, say, a blog post, you might want to have a plan that includes all of your subsections and maybe three key points that you want to hit on in each section. Because then when you start writing, you can kind of see where you're going. So you can think, okay, I just have to do like these two sections and then I'm done. And like, I know for me, that's kind of motivating because I don't feel like I just have to keep going and going and going. It just like, and also subconsciously, your mind can kind of be working on the next section as you write. And you know what you're going to cover and you can do it in a more structured order. Again, I don't think there's like a one size fits all answer sometimes. You have to kind of be willing to experiment. The other thing I would say with, particularly with drafting, but also with editing, is try and find the time of day when you can focus the best. So for me, it's mornings. Like I write best in the morning. You know, for you, it might be like lunchtime or evening or midnight. But most of us have like peaks of focus during the day and, you know, times in the day when we just kind of slump. Like for me, 4 p.m. is sort of useless. Like I can't do anything then. So maybe try writing at some different times of day and just see when does the material flow. When does it feel hard? And try and kind of schedule your writing around that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, Ali. My question's a little different. I am an editor of a blog that is written by a number of different people. And they're not always the same people. And there are a number of different styles and different levels of writing that come in to me. How do I go about editing their copy, not so that it sounds like me, but so that it sounds like them, but that it's still correct.
That's a really tough one. This is why I just covered editing your own work. I edit other people's work. I do it for clients generally, sometimes blog posts, sometimes ebooks. And there is definitely a kind of skill in preserving someone's voice because sometimes, you know, they might want to say things in a different way from how I would want to say them, but that's their voice. So I think the four steps still apply. So the first, you know, just to read through the whole thing and sort of see what is their voice, what are they trying to get across. And for me, when I edit, I feel like my role is to make their voice clearer. So to make it more of them and to try and bring that across. So that might mean like pointing out places where their tone seems to have slipped a bit and sort of saying like, did you intend to write it this way? Because it actually sounds quite formal and academic. And, you know, this other paragraph seemed really chatty and down to earth. Sometimes it might mean trying to edit a little bit for house style. So that's kind of when things like consistency come in. I think unless you've got, like, so it might be that, for instance, you change the word ebook so that it's always written the same way. Like, I don't think your writers would mind. But when you're trying to get their voice, you know, to try and really preserve what's unique to them, I think it's hard to do. Sometimes I try and get people on the phone and kind of listen to how they naturally speak. because that can resonate. Or, you know, or ask them, like, what do they enjoy reading, and get them to point out some blog posts that really work for them as readers. Because often the stuff that resonates with us as readers is kind of close to the way that we would naturally write. I think it's tough. I don't think there's, like, an easy way to edit someone else's work. You know, it's because you've got, like, a lot to go with. I mean, I try and err on the side of, like, I'll edit things that are blatantly wrong, like typos, I'll just change them. But if it's more like a suggestion, I'll just put it in as a comment, and I'll say, how about phrasing this way? Or, you know, did you intend it to sound like that? Because it seems like you're kind of insulting the readers a bit here, or, you know, just, but to make sure that they have okayed the change, and that to some extent they can understand why I've changed it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hi.
My question is just if you have different spellings in different countries.
Oh, that's like, a good question.
Is it just really a matter of just being consistent, or do you have a particular way of dealing with that?
Yeah, this happens for me, because as you can probably tell by my accent, I'm from the UK, but most of the blogs and the websites I write for are in the US, so I have to use US spelling and grammar and words and so on. I change the spell checker in Word so that it's US English, not UK English. I know that sounds really, really basic, but that is kind of, you have to do that. For me, it's not just the fact that spelling is different. It's also that sometimes there's like different words. So an idiom that would make sense to other people in the UK might mean absolutely nothing in the US. And sometimes, so when we do weight, we don't measure things just in pounds. If we're talking about like a person's weight, we use stones and pounds. A stone is a kind of archaic measure, which means 14 pounds. So when I once wrote a blog post for like a kind of health related blog, and I mentioned stones and pounds, like all the American readers were like, what the hell? You know, what's a stone? So you have to kind of be alert to not just the fact that words are spelt with a Z in the US and an S in the UK or something, but also for things that might be different. I don't think like I have a foolproof system for this, but I think if you read lots of content which is written, you know, in the country of your kind of target, and if it's your own blog, that you kind of just pick one style of English, so whether that's UK English or Australian English or US English, and you try and just stick to that one style. Like, I, on my own blog, I always blog in UK English, and it's really rare that anyone kind of objects. So I think, you know, you pick whichever you are comfortable in writing in for your blog. When you're guest posting, you make an extra effort to get it right for that blog.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Alfred DeCosta. Mm-hmm. I'm new to blogging. My blog site is Bahamas Travel Information. I have thousands of comments on my blog, mm-hmm. in which people talk highly of me. You happen to be the expert, so I'd like for you to check on my blog, and you probably could send me an email.
That's very kind. Did you have a question? You just want to give me your, thank you. Yeah, like I'll be around at the end, so if anyone wants to pass me a card at the end, that's fine. Have we got any more questions?
Yeah, nice presentation.
Thank you.
I'm writing a kind of like a 10-page guide for how to use kind of advanced features of WordPress. So I want this to be downloadable for my people in mm-hmm. exchange for an email. It's like a power guide.
Yeah.
Any tips for writing in a PDF newsletter style versus just mm-hmm. like a straight ebook? Because graphics and formatting kind of matter to not tune them out, you know, I think it. What are your thoughts?
I think take advantage of the kind of PDF format as opposed to a blog post, because you know it's a little bit easier perhaps to embed graphics and to do some design. You can do some design stuff that would be harder on a blog, say, or even in an email. So with an email newsletter, which I think you mentioned just briefly, I would avoid having it like be very formatted, because some people will only get the plain text, and some people who get the HTML version won't turn on the pictures. So I'd always avoid, like with email, usually simpler is good. With a PDF, you know, the great thing with PDFs is you can kind of rely on them always looking the same, like whatever the device, that's kind of the point of the PDF format. I would say, like, consider whether you want to do it landscape rather than horizontal. I know that's a small thing, but on a computer screen, it's going to more often be read, like landscape can fill the screen. If people are going to be reading it maybe on a tablet, they can sort of turn it either way.
Do you think the white space is better rule applies when you do like a full page PDF?
Yep, I think definitely. I usually bump up the font size quite big on PDFs so that there's not quite... So if you do it like with, say, 11-point font or 12-point, it can look quite small as a PDF because people are viewing one whole page. Usually, like, it's not like a Word document where you just kind of write it for yourself or what have you. So I usually do my PDFs in maybe 13 or 14 point, like not so ridiculously big that it looks like you're cheating them out of some pages, but you know, just give that white space, you know, use bullet points, use things like boxes and different styles for different bits of text. You could even do like two columns or something, like maybe play around with it and see what works, because you have got more flexibility than with a blog post. But I would absolutely say that the same considerations apply. So bold text, bullet points, put in some graphics or some images. Like if you're teaching people something, you know, consider how you can use screenshots or graphics to help them really take in the message and to give some consistency. Cool. Got like a few more minutes if anybody else has a question. No? Great. Well, you can all go early. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming. If anyone wants to ask anything. Oh, thank you. Thank you.